Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to It's Rainmaking Time. As we introduce you to some of the most exciting stewards in the water industry and in the water business, I have a quick little story I want to open the show with. When I was 9 years old, I was involved in tournament tennis and had a wonderful teacher named Michael Amador from Mexico. And 2 years after Mr. Amador was training me, he said he had to leave and go to another city. And prior to him leaving, he had the kindness to walk me over to the Beverly Hills Tennis Club, where a renowned champion tennis player walked onto the court and said, "Hey, baby, I'm Pancho, Pancho Segura. I'm your new coach." Now, of course, I didn't know what that meant at age 9 because I didn't really know what I was contending with. What I was told is he was one of the top tournament tennis players in the world, a world champion, and a fabulous teacher. But it was at that time in my life where I met a master teacher. And one of the things I learned from Pancho that got translated through the oral tradition had to do with the information about energy. And this is something that really is not taught in schools. We don't learn about energy in schools. But I'll tell you this. When you walk into a tennis tournament, you can feel the difference between the first match, the round of 16, the quarterfinals, the semifinals, and the finals. Something about the atmosphere changes. And it is exactly about that atmosphere change that we are going to introduce you to not only some wonderful stewards and pioneers, but some great teachers. Also, I want to tell you that, you know, we don't learn in school, and we certainly don't learn from friends and associates, that our skin breathes, that it absorbs both what is in the air and what is in the water. That means that when you and I bathe and shower, that the skin absorbs not only as much, but what I've heard is more than even what's in the drinking water. Now you say, what does that have to do with today's segment, which is on water composition and frequency? You see, somebody also has not told the masses that water has memory. Memory the way an elephant has memory. And that this memory is acute. Well, I'm not going to talk about this because really I'm not in the league of appropriateness to be talking about this the way my guests are. And let's get to these guests. We want to welcome to It's Rainmaking Time Bill Cox. He is the founder of Primary Water Associates. He is a renowned water locator or dowser. He is one of the people, along with his mentor and pioneer Vern Cameron, who is responsible for filling what was then the droughted up Lake Elsinore. And he has found and is bringing to the world new water from humanity. Welcome to It's Rainmaking Time, Bill Cox. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
I also want to invite in and welcome with big hugs John Evans. John Evans, who is from Alaska Giant, a renowned researcher, a microbiologist and scientist who has invented and discovered a way to stimulate the soil in a way that requires little to no fertilizer. Please welcome to It's Rainmaking Time, John Evans.
Good morning, Kim.
Good morning. And let's not forget he's from Ireland. He's come a long way to be in Alaska. Also, let us invite Paul Baraccia. Paul is a technical installation expert in the field of drinking water filtration. He is specializing in reverse osmosis, deionization, and remineralization. He has been involved in the interest of bringing safe drinking water to people in California, has fought very hard to keep fluoridation out of the water here. Welcome, Paul Baraccia. Paul,
thank you.
Good morning.
For having
thank
me
you
on the
for
show,
being
Kim.
Here. And also, I would like to welcome as our special guest Manfred Bauer, a wonderful man, a scientist, a researcher, part shaman. And how can you be part shaman? You're either full shaman or you're not. Who is going to explain to us the mysteries of the spin of water, the direction of the flow of water. Manfred Bauer from Santé Natural Products. Good morning and welcome.
Thanks, Kip, and I hope we're going to have a great
time. And we're going to have a wonderful time. John Evans, are you there?
I am here. It seems like we have an international set of intellects here.
I thought what we might do is begin the show, really. I'm so pleased to have all of you here. And I think it's difficult to have people that are front runners in a field come together, even if they agree on some parts of the page, if they are bringing in different contributions. I see this as a kind of synergy this morning that you're all bringing. I have tremendous respect for you, and that's why I think it's essential that you come together, and I'm honored to bring you together. I'd like, John, if we could start for just a moment with John Evans. I'd like you to share a little bit with the public what you have done in agriculture, because when we think of safe drinking water and we think of purifying water, bringing water that has a composition that is inherently clean, we don't always think of it in terms of agriculture. So I'd like you to share a little bit about yourself and your work and what you have found.
Well, it's fairly difficult to put in perspective just over, you know, a few minutes. But basically what I've been studying for, well, 20, 30 years is the microbiology of the soil and the interaction with the plants and also water and how it affects the plants, oxygen, you name it. What I've done through trial and error, I would say you would put the little pieces of the jigsaw puzzle together throughout the years, and I've come up with a system that will enhance growing like it's unbelievable worldwide. It's very difficult to explain everything. There is a symbiosis within the microbiology of the soil that interacts with the roots, and a lot more nutrients are able to be processed and taken up into the plants. Could you give me some more specific questions?
You have been working with Nordic Living Water Systems, and you have been using the structures that have to do with changing the frequency of water. And that's how you and I actually met and talked to each other. I'd like you to share with the audiences, before we bring in the other gentlemen, what has this effect on what you're doing? Because, you know, you're already a pioneer in your field.
Mm-hmm.
So being a pioneer in your field, what is it about living water? Can you explain living water before we bring Manfred in?
Okay, what I can explain it this way. I've studied water, and I've known there was a very good connection with the structure of water, and it's one of those where you have like an intuition. Years and years ago, that there was something profound in water, whether it's from a mountain stream or a dead lake, and the availability of the oxygen and also the mineralization and the energy in water itself. It gives you an idea where people who live on mountains, they have longer lives and so on. But what happened with me, I've tried magnets, I've tried hydrogen peroxide and all the other gizmos that you've got out there. And then I started studying about imploded water, and I did a lot of research on imploded water, and then it kind of directed me towards Mikhail.
Okay, but hold on one second here, John. Implosion water, is that the water from Victor Schoberger that he writes about?
Is.
Can you explain it? Or actually, Manfred, are you there?
I'm still here.
Okay, Manfred, can you explain what implosion water is?
Well, everything in nature is working under the implosion effect. The only guys who are using explosion effects are humans, like the explosion motor.
What does that mean?
Everything what is natural working is using the implosion system. And everything what is artificially working, what we construct, is using the explosion. That means you ignite something and something expands. The implosion is different. It doesn't expand. Let's say if you have a picture tube from a TV, as a simple example, and you blow it apart, you throw a stone at it, it will implode. That means because in the picture tube is a vacuum, you break the picture tube and it becomes, you can't see it because it goes very fast, it becomes very small because the vacuum is gone, and that's what is a simple explanation for implosion.
Talk a little bit about, John, you've been using this kind of implosion structure from Nordic Living Water Systems. Talk about what you're finding.
Okay. Well, I think I wanted to put that a bit more succinctly as far as imploded water. You can look at it in many ways, from a tornado to shells. Everything has got a spiral going inwards. and more energy, when it goes inwards, more energy is taken into it and held there. So when you explode something, you lose that energy, and everything that the human element does is always going outwards. So therefore, from motors, pumps, air conditioners, everything is going outwards. So if you bring something inward, you're actually concentrating that energy within itself. I hope that is a little bit clearer.
Very good. And I think we have Mikkel Lund from Nordic Living Water Systems out of Canada. Welcome
good
to
morning.
It's Rainmaking Time. We're going ahead talking about implosion water without you for all those minutes. I don't know how we're getting away with it, but we are.
That's okay.
Is there anything you'd like to add having to do with water and implosion water as distinct from explosion water? Or would you like to share a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, let's talk about water. The main issue about water in our civilization is that we treat it without any deeper understanding of it. We mistreat it, you can say, like first of all by putting it into straight pipes, forcing the water to move in concentric movements, so it's generating more heat as it's pressured through these pipes. And also we use high-pressure turbines to transport the water through these straight pipes. Then it loses its energy, and then you've got all kinds of problems with bacteria build up, etc.
What I've read is that even if you purify, you do reverse osmosis, you do all the advanced traditional purification methods at a bacteria level, and you take out all the horrible stuff in water, that what is profound is that there is a distinction having to do with its frequency, that the frequency of that which you just removed from the water is still in the water. Now, that's relevant to the extent if you understand what frequency is. If you do not understand what frequency is, it sounds like the outer limits.
Frequency is very simple. It's everything is vibrating at specific rates or various rates. Even a stone has a frequency. Anything you can think about has a frequency that you can measure. I can't measure that myself, of course. But everything is having a vibrational pattern that vibrates at specific frequencies. When you take water into a filtration system, which can be necessary because of the pollutants in the water, I'm not going to talk down about filtration. It can be very necessary, but it's only part of the solution. Filtration doesn't energize the water. It doesn't comply with the, let's say, the laws that governs the existence of water.
Can you stand by, please? Manfred Bauer, I'd like you to share your take on frequency.
Okay, what the first gentleman said about the ingoing thing or outward going things, that's absolutely correct. What I learned in Germany in the dowsing school and from other teachers over there is that we are talking about that like the left turning effect. Everything what is normally right turning, that means a right turning spin of the electrons on the, in the atom, everything what is right turning is negative for a human, everything what is left turning is positive for a human. The system what I'm having is even changing this direction. That means if you go now further into the frequency, there's a scale out there, it's the Bio-Angstrom scale. It was once developed by a French guy named Antoine Bovy, so it's called the Bovy scale. It was worked on universities in Paris on that thing. And the scale is simply going from zero to infinity. And at a level of 6,500, that's the level on this scale where the zero point is. That means anything below 6,500 bioangstrom is negative for a human. Anything above is positive.
Can you stand by, please? Ladies and gentlemen, you are tuning into It's Rainmaking Time. I'm Kim Greenhouse. We're here with a wonderful group of people, John Evans, Bill Cox, Paul Baraccia, Manfred Bauer, and Mikkel Lund, who are all front runners in the safe water industry. And please continue, sir.
Okay. That means if you have a device or if you are capable of using a device which is changing the frequency from below 6,500 to above 6,500 means exactly that you even change the spin of the electrons of the atoms. A very simple example is swimming pools. Everybody knows that chlorine, or now even the fluoride in the water in California, is a poison. Everybody knows it, but we still use it. The weird thing is, if you energize pool water and you bring it up to a level over 6,500 on that frequency scale, you can still measure the chlorine, but you can't even taste it anymore, and you can't even smell it.
But the question is, even if that's true, it's still there.
It's still there, but it won't harm you because it's a left-turning chlorine. It's not a right-turning chlorine. We even had tests made in doctor's offices where they put people into a normal chlorinated pool, and they took blood samples, and you can see the effect of the chlorine in the blood immediately. And then we took other people into a pool which had the same chlorine level, except it was an energized pool, and the level was at around 25,000, 30,000, and there was no effect on the blood of the people. The chlorine didn't harm them at all.
You know, the reality is that most people are going to continue to swim. The reality is that most of us are going to take showers that have not only chlorine in them, but other types of agents that are not good for the body. And in a sense, you know, you're all offering different structures to contend with this. But you're coming from different places, am I correct?
Okay, to kind of get it in a little bit better perspective, as far as the chlorine is concerned, or any other compound, what happens is the elements within that compound get restructured. Therefore, they change their polarity from positive to negative, negative to positive. And therefore, they don't recombine to make that chlorine compound per se, as it were. So therefore, it becomes neutralized. Can I get some feedback from Manfred on that?
Well, I would not say it's neutralized, because chemically you can still measure it. And there are some other things. It's even, let me give you one little story about poison. I had a customer, his wife was allergic to fire ants, and we know that fire ant bites are very annoying. And she was absolutely allergic. That means if she gets a bit from a fire ant, she had to be in a hospital within an hour to get a shot. And it happened Sunday morning. She was working in the garden, stepped into a hill with fire ants, and got around about 13 to 15 bites on her foot. And she ran in the house, and she told her husband, bring me to the hospital. And he had one of our things. What Kim already knows is one of our energy mugs, which is a double-walled mug containing that energized water or gel. And he said, okay, let's give it a try. And he just simply put that mug over her foot without water, just the dry mug. And within 5 minutes, the reaction was gone. Just because the poison from the ants was left turning. So that means the poison was still there, but it didn't react with her body.
What does the public do with this information then? In other words, translated, you and I go about our days, the public, we all go about our days. So are you saying that the composition may be the same in the sense that the pollutants or the toxic materials can still be in the water, but you make a frequency change and all of a sudden it doesn't have the impact on the body? I don't get it.
That's correct.
That's absolutely correct. If you change the frequency over that specific level, what I said, the energy level of the water is so high that the pollutants in the water will not disturb your body anymore.
You know, Dr. Wolfgang Ludwig talked about the fact that water stores and carries information, which all of you know.
That's correct. Yeah.
But the reality also is that he said that typically in science, people should be not necessarily looking at matter. When you're looking at the frequency, don't necessarily just look at the matter. Like, we measure the matter, how much bacteria is in X. But there's something having to do with this notion of frequency, measuring the frequency that's relevant to our health and not just what's in the matter of the water. Does that sound correct?
That sounds correct.
Bill Cox, are you there?
Yes, I'm with you.
Okay. Do you have any questions to ask of these other gentlemen or any input here?
Well, no, I'm very interested in their work, and I'm really pleased to see they're doing it. I wonder if they must be familiar with the message from water by Masaru Emoto. They call it HADO, H-A-D-O.
Yeah, I'm familiar with him, yeah.
It's described as the world of subtle energy related to consciousness, or chi, as the Japanese would be like ki or chi, which relates to how we can affect the water and how it affects us. and they've been able to, with magnetic resonance, to find microclusters. And it's a wonderful work that they've done. And they can photograph water crystals, something like snow crystals. And they can see how we affect the water, how water affects us. If you're interested, you know, we could be in touch, and I'll give you the information on this.
Gentlemen, could you please stand by? We're going to move to a break, and we're going to shift gears. You know, many of us have unfinished business that has to do with leftover memory and association from other times and places and events with other people, other than just in our current body of affairs. And the woman we've invited on the line has written a book, Your Soul's Journey Through Time, The Akashic Records. Please welcome Roberta Herzog to It's Rainmaking Time. Are you there, Roberta?
I sure am. Thank you, Kim. This is a fabulous show.
Thank you very much. You have a fabulous book, and that's why I've invited you on here. I was wondering if you could explain, not an easy concept, about the Akashic Records, because you're one of the few people in the world to ever write about it.
Yes, I'd be happy to. The Akashic Records are records of lifetimes that everyone has lived on this planet. And many people have issues that are past lifetime oriented with their interpersonal relationships, with their health, with their vocation, their purpose in life, just about everything. And they keep going round and round in circles. They don't know exactly what they need to do, and it's cyclic. They go to therapists, and the therapist can help them with good modalities academically, but they hit a wall because many times the issues are past life. And so people have come to me for the past 33 plus years. That's a long time. And they say, look, I keep going around and around. This thing's kept coming up again and again and again. What can I do? So if the cause of what they're traveling through is in at least one or more prior lifetimes, I'm able to tell them this is a civilization, this is a time period, this is what they did, this is what was said to them. So we treat the cause and not the effect. And within an hour's time, it is very evidential. It's a work that I've done all my lifetime, and I've just finished writing a book on the subject called The Akashic Records. Get it on my website. It's my name, RobertaHerzog.com.
You are also a religious scholar, are you not?
Yes, I've studied for many decades world religions, esoteric sciences, metaphysics, and so forth. And it's been a privilege to do this. As a matter of fact, some weeks ago when you had Mr. Cox on, I recognized his name because I have a lot of the back issues of the Pyramid Guy, and it was wonderful. So I'm so glad he's back on today.
Well, thank you for being here, and if those of you would like to pick up Roberta's book, and it really is a very, very elegant explanation, context for our lives, no matter what religion you're from. Tell them the name of the book, Roberta.
It's called The Akashic Records, Your Soul's Journey Through Time, and it can be gotten exclusively through me at www.robertaherzog.com.
Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for being here, Roberta.
Wonderful show.
Okay, we're back to It's Rainmaking Time. We have a cadre of pretty heavy hitters in the water business and industry. I'd like to bring John Evans back on.
This is very interesting. I'd like to put my input. I consider myself a practical scientist. I know, you know, I think maybe a few of your listeners could be a little bit confused over certain elements in our conversation. So what I do, I like to take all these principles and put them into practical use and use experiments to make certain everything works. To give you an idea, just with the ant, you know, sting situation, I've had people who've used these vortex water, what I'll call vortex water or energy water, where they've lived in cities with very highly chlorinated water. And one girl in Ireland, she couldn't even bathe. She'd go to my daughter's house to take a shower. And she got one of these units, and she just couldn't believe it. And now she can shower in her own apartment. And another lady in Monterey, California, couldn't drink her water for over 20 years. And she got one of the units, and now she can drink the water. And same way with a gentleman in Las Vegas. So that's just the chlorine element of it. But as far as growing element is, that's a whole other thing altogether. Well, I took some water from my neighbor, and I brought it to a friend of mine, and he had one of the units in his house. And he had borrowed a dissolved oxygen meter from the Alaska Department of Natural Resources, where they check water for the salmon spawning in the rivers. And we found that the water had 24% more dissolved oxygen in it.
What does that mean?
That means that the oxygen is more available. Water is water is water is water, but it's not water, because it's H2O. But you might say water would, the oxygen would be locked up in a dead form. So when it's spun in a vortex, this is from my own feedback now. I'm not, the classical scientist. So the oxygen is then released into the water. And so I look at it in that, not only for humans, you'll get much more red blood corpuscles and so on and so forth, but for agriculture, that's phenomenal. And also think about your septic system. Most of your septic systems are anaerobic.
What does that
anaerobic,
mean?
Anaerobic, that means a certain type of bacteria that lives in dead water, means without oxygen. Anaerobic means without oxygen. Aerobic, which most humans are, we're all aerobic. We have aerobic bacteria in our gut and so on. And so if you can stimulate, which is the aerobics, of course, are the good guys. Anaerobes produce all the E. coli's and all the poisons and all the other stuff. So in a septic system, with more oxygen going into the septic system, like in wastewater treatment plants, they have to pump air bubbles into the sewage in order to stimulate the aerobics so it'll digest much, much faster. So that is in one case. So with the extra oxygen, and then you've got a better mineralization in the water itself. I've done some various experiments with the water, especially my water. I've had my water in a jar for 10 weeks, my old water and my new water. The old water was gray, and the new water, after 10 weeks, it was still crystal clear. It was unbelievable, and I've taken experiments in Anchorage and Palmer and other places around, and the results are always the same. You've got gray water in one jar, and you've got crystal water in the other jar. Now, then I look into agriculture. So we've got minerals available. We've got oxygen in the soil. Well, everybody knows that you need to turn a compost pile to get more oxygen in it so that microbes can multiply. So in the soil, everything just goes what I call ballistic.
We're going to call in Paul Baraccia, who's here in the studio. Paul, do you have any questions for any of the gentlemen who've been presenting?
Yes, and I'm delighted to be here with this fine group of minds. And I work, my background is in the beginning in the social justice areas of dealing with environmental pollution and water pollution, fluoridation. I worked with the late Dr. John Yamayannis in fighting to stop the pollution of public water with a variety of chemicals, primarily hydrofluosilicic acid. And I've developed into an installations expert in applying reverse osmosis, and then I moved into reverse osmosis deionization, trying to find a way to remove fluoride and other heavy chemicals. And then realized I needed to put minerals in the water and found a mineralization cartridge for that. And my question is, in the best possible scenario, from what I understand, regarding the energizing of water and the revitalizing of water, wouldn't the best possible world be where we remove the toxic industrial chemicals, the residues that we've poured into the water since the Industrial Revolution, to remove those things first and start with a clean base and remineralize and re-energize, as opposed to changing the structure of things that are removable, especially chlorine? Chlorine is one of the easiest chemicals in the water to remove with carbon filters without even getting into reverse osmosis in more complicated areas. And I just wanted to pose that to the fine guests that we have on the line
here. Is there one in particular you want to ask? Manfred Bauer, Mikael Lund, John Evans.
Well, I think from what I'm hearing from the work that all these gentlemen are doing, that they're working more in the area of revitalizing and bringing back the life and the energy to water, where my area has been in removing what's in the water already. And I've been moving into the direction. I've had conversations with Mikael Lund, and I'm interested in using his revitalizer because I've been searching for years for the ideal system that removes what's in the water first and then starts with a clean base and adding so we know it's in the water. And some of the conversation, in a way, sounds to me what I hear from conventional allopathic medicine when they say, well, there's an acceptable level, or it's only a little bit of fluoride or a little bit of mercury, or, you know, and I say to customers when they're relaying this kind of information to me, well, how much lead is okay to have on your child's brain? Is just a little bit okay? So
have a little lead. Have lead will travel. How about some mercury in the mouth, everybody? Keep going to those dentists.
Right. And of course, what are considered acceptable levels in conventional society are simply a result of bureaucrats and politicians deciding what is going to be the least burdensome on industries that pollute the water in the first place, as far as having responsibility not to do that or to remove it.
Manfred Bauer,
yeah.
You said something so fascinating the other day on the phone to me about, you were explaining, and I'm not going to get it verbatim, but your take on the universe starting and water's role in the universe and the charge and your take on water. Do you remember that conversation?
You mean the thing with the great flood?
Yes. Now, we're going a little bit off the subject to the right, and then we're going to open up for callers. But why don't you share that for just a moment or two?
Okay, well, my research and what I learned from my teachers and what I could even verify in the meantime with scientists, and it was even on some TV shows. The weird thing is you go all the way in the Bible, all the way back into the Bible, and you read the Old Testament, and you read about people which lived before the Great Flood, that people like Methuselah and whatever their name was, they lived 600 to 800 years. The weird thing is that at that time, all the water on our planet was so-called positive or energized. And what is scientifically proven is that round about at the time when the Great Flood occurred, there was a supernova in another galaxy, and our planet had to fly through this emitted cloud of microwaves, X-rays, and whatever radiation this supernova was producing. So similar effect is, it's like was like a big microwave. That means from that point on, all the water on this planet became negative. It became right-turning, and the energy level is below that magic number of 6,500. The weird thing of all that stuff is that what we discussed before is that water has a memory. And as Kim said, it really has a memory better even than an elephant. And the system I'm using, it's very simple to explain, because we are transferring information into the water, which is in first place bringing back the memory of the water. That's the weird thing, because once you energize the water with this information, it looks like it says, oh, I remember, a couple of million years ago I was like that. And the water stays like that. It will not go back into the original stage as it is today. Once you have it energized, it's done. It's staying that way. The only thing you can kill it is with X-rays or microwaves. That means, of course, in other ways, don't use a microwave, but okay, that's a different subject. Let me add something to the filters, what John just said. It's very easy, of course, to remove chlorine with a charcoal filter from water. You use a charcoal filter, you measure the chlorine level, it's gone. The only problem is, as I just said, water has a memory. That means if you remove chemically the chlorine in the water in your body still reacts as if there would be chlorine in the water, because the molecules of the water are structured around the chlorine molecule, and if you remove the chlorine molecule, the water is still structured that way. That is something like the homeopathic principle.
That's profound.
What you have to do is the second step. It's fine to remove it, but you have to erase the memory of the water that the chlorine was in there. And that's what we are doing, too.
So I have a question. Will the water remember that it was erased?
First we erase the memory, and then we energize it, and that's the way it's going
to
stay.
I'd like to respond to Paul Barachi's talk about the filtration efforts.
Go ahead.
First of all, Paul, I think you're doing you have been doing great work, and I know where you're coming from, especially with a small when you said how much lead is acceptable. Now the issue here is not only the physical presence of these pollutants, but the electromagnetic signatures in the water, which we can call the memory of water. Those signals, those electromagnetic vibrations in the water, is what affects us, because we are also electromagnetic in nature. You were talking about the best scenario. Wouldn't that be to remove those pollutants? I would say that's the second best scenario. The first and foremost important issue is to stop polluting the waters of this world. We can't just pollute it and then remove it or neutralize it. We have to altogether stop polluting the water of this world. That should be the main focus. Now, then we can start repairing, since we haven't stopped the pollution yet. And I think a combination of filtration, or maybe first the first choice would be to revitalize it and then filter it one way or the other and then revitalize it again. That would probably be my bet on what is the best solution. Filtration is definitely of importance, so I support you in that aspect.
I also think that what you just said was so elegant about the electromagnetic signature, because that's something on a very basic level.
Can I add one more thing?
Please.
Yeah, when John Evans talked about his experiences with the water, I remember John told me one of the first things he noticed was that when he living in Alaska, having an air humidifier, which he had to clean every week, then when he went to clean it after he got the revitalized water, it was clean as a whistle. John, can you describe what the problem was with that air humidifier?
This was quite extraordinary, because we do have a lot of minerals in our well water, and it has a filter, and we would have to clean it out every week at least. Actually, my wife went in to go clean it, and she just couldn't believe her eyes. It was just squeaky clean, and there wasn't any of that scum around the sides like it would normally be.
John, would that be slime?
That was slime, and I would always attribute that slime to be an anaerobic bacteria that was forming on the sides, just like an algae would form on the sides of certain containers, too, or in, obviously in a lake. So it was, devoid of anything that was obnoxious. I've noticed don't have to clean the toilet with chemicals anymore, just to swish around. No iron deposits in my shower. So there's all little nuances. Don't hardly need soap to wash your hands unless you've got grease on. Things rinse out very easily.
Can you stand by, gentlemen, just a moment? This is Kim Greenhouse with It's Rainmaking Time. We are doing a segment on the water composition and frequency. I want to open up the call-in lines. For those of you who are interested, who have questions for any of our guests, you may call 1-877-625-3724. Let's take it from the top. 1-877-625-3724. Let's hear from you. This is a segment on water composition and frequency. We're telling you that there's an electromagnetic signature, that when you have purified your water and done everything you can humanly do, that there's still another step or two to go, and that water has memory like that or better than an elephant, that this can be verified. And you can call 1-877-625-3724. Please bring everybody back on the line. Paul Barachia, do you have any questions for these gentlemen?
Yes, I kind of wanted to go to the next level as far as water pollution, chlorine and some of these other chemicals that can be removed relatively easily. But, in California, we've had MTBE pollution. Also in Los Angeles at the old Rocketdyne facility up in Chatsworth, they found recently when Boeing was trying to sell this property to build homes on, that when they tested the groundwater, that there was elevated levels of tritium left over from meltdowns that occurred in the 50s when we didn't know what they were doing up there. And what I understand is that with tritium, that the uranium isotopes are actually, it actually is the water. And I'm wondering if I get some feedback from some of the distinguished panel here on how does these energy revitalizing technologies work on something like tritium and MTBE.
Manfred, do you want to start with that?
I have no clue. I have to say that frankly, because I've never tried it. I've tried it with a lot of substances, but I have never tried it with radioactivity. So that's just like John Evans said, we got to go there into some experiments and then we will find out.
It's kind of like the next frontier, it sounds like.
Could I put a little word in?
Please do. I want you all to put your words in.
Okay. I'd like to do lots and lots of research in every department as far as pollution, human health, you name it. Anyway, I have been working, and maybe somebody knows about a Dr. Carl Oppenheimer. He has invented a bacteria. Well, it's kind of odd when you say invented a bacteria. Well, this is one of the oldest forms of bacteria. It doesn't have a DNA. It has an RNA, so therefore it always duplicates itself exactly. Now, this bacteria can just about eat anything. If you remember the Exxon Valdez spill.
Yes.
And they started putting bacteria down to start eating the hydrocarbons. Well, that was a primitive form back in those days. But now, Dr. Carl Oppenheimer, who actually talked with the United Nations, and his bacteria is safe and everything. WTO, you know, acknowledges that it's all safe. And he goes all over the world with all where there's big, you know, chemical or oil spills or whatever. And he has this bacteria that he puts down and cleans up everything. So that is one solution right there.
Boy, this would be great to clean up the governments that are operating inappropriately. Should we get some of this RNA? I think we'll have a third party. It'll be the RNA. Please go ahead, sir. Go ahead.
So, you know, this is a great jump forward. And I'll tell you what we've done. An associate of his and myself, and I'm working with him, we did some experiments in China with this, with their pollution and, you know, recycling projects over there, and also helping out the farmers on a lot of acreage. They were so impressed, they immediately gave him an import license. So by next year, the Chinese government has asked us to go in so that we could do a recycling project. That's with wastewater, you know, anything, with composting and the whole works. So people are listening around the world. And as soon as the Chinese did that, the Philippines also invited us in, too. So there is great prospects ahead. And, of course, with that and also with the revitalized water, the combination with both of them, with agriculture, human health, you name it, it's going to have a profound effect.
Well, I'm very appreciative that all of you have come to the show today. We have a few minutes left. And is there somebody here? Was that Bill?
This is Bill Cox.
Hello, Bill Cox. Welcome, Bill Cox from Primary Water Associates. Good morning.
I would like to just put in a word in regard to this. I've been working with about 125-year-old validated, well-documented science called primary new water. This is new water which is created above the magma as superheated steam and finds its way through fractured rock to the surface or near the surface of the earth. And as a dowser, that's what I do. I try to locate it where it's affordable to drill to get this water, and it's pure water coming up, so it doesn't have to be treated unless it comes through a contaminated formation. But generally speaking, primary water itself is new water and clear water, so we're not talking about water treatment when we can bring that up. And this could solve a lot of the world's water pollution problems.
This is water that does not come from rainfall.
That's right. It comes anti-gravitative to the surface under superheated steam pressure from below above the magma.
Bill, this is Paul Bracci. I had a question for you.
Sure.
Because a lot of the different bottled waters that are being talked about, you know, they tend to pull out what seems to be only the good things in the water. And of course, you know, the ground doesn't know the difference between calcium and magnesium and mercury and lead and fluoride.
Yes.
So when you're pulling a water like you're talking about out of the ground, a pure water now, is that devoid of the minerals and the natural inherent things in the earth? And if it isn't, then how do you separate the things that are in the ground that are harmful from the things that are not? Because a lot of times it's natural gets thrown around in the public. And I say, well, volcanic eruptions and tidal waves and earthquakes are natural as well, but you wouldn't want to get in their way.
Well, with good engineering, someone who understands what's going on with primary water, they can engineer the well so that if there are pollutants coming in, I'm talking about mineral pollutants that come into the well from fractured rock below, then they can shield out, pour cement down in the hole and re-drill through it and block out those formations. And that is part of the science, not only of locating it, but also the completion of the well and bringing it to the surface in its purest form.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to It's Rainmaking Time. We are coming to the close of this segment on water composition and frequency. We want to thank Mikhail Lund, Paul Baraccia, Bill Cox, John Evans, and Manfred Bauer for being here. You're fantastic stewards. The world needs you. We're excited you've met today. And when we say it's rainmaking time, we mean it's rainmaking time.